Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, I'm seeing a lot of pink ribbons these days.
That makes sense, Mark. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
And it's still the leading cause of cancer deaths among women.
The latest statistics from the Centers for Disease Control show more than 120,000 women diagnosed in 2008.
And sadly, more than 40,000 women died that year from breast cancer as well. So much more work needs to be done.
And that work is going on and at levels we've never seen before. Genomics is poised to have a powerful impact. We're finding ways to select drugs that are targeted to a specific type of cancer a woman is diagnosed with, so we are hopeful for more individualized approaches, more effective approaches to battling breast cancer as time goes on.
And yet the fundamental of prevention is still holds true here. Early detection, getting a mammogram or checking in with your primary care provider is still the best bet.
Well, those are good health behaviors and the ones we advocate. And speaking of behavior, behavioral health is also in the spotlight this month, Mark. October is National Depression Awareness Month.
And 1 in 10 Americans have been diagnosed with some form of depression or other mental illness, and experts feel the numbers of those afflicted are much higher.
That's why depression screening is so important. Screening, but also screening that leads to treatment. We know that that underlies other health issues, and we know from experience that people who are depressed do more poorly at managing their chronic illness, have worse health outcomes, and it's actually one of the leading causes of death worldwide. Number 10, I think.
Our guest today can shed some light on how these and other illnesses can be battled in the future using genomics and mobile technology.
Dr. Joseph Smith is Chief Medical and Science Officer for West Health, a research and policy organization that seeks to lower healthcare costs by accelerating the development of wireless health solutions.
Dr. Smith has got some great information on the advances being made in mHealth and genomics as well.
And factcheck.org's Lori Robertson takes a look at a claim from the campaign trail that the Affordable Care Act created a board that will tell people what kind of treatments they can have.
No matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by Googling CHC Radio.
And as always, if you have comments, email us at chcradio.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you.
We'll get to Dr. Joseph Smith of the West Health Institute in just a moment. But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news. The election is just weeks away, and Governor Romney has closed a near 8-point deficit in the campaign since the first presidential debate with President Barack Obama. The two candidates are in a dead heat, according to a number of polls, with Governor Romney edging slightly ahead on health care. And health care figured prominently as expected, though the Romney campaign has had to do some backpedaling since the debate. During the debate, Romney claimed he would allow people with pre-existing conditions to buy health care coverage. That is already in place, but only if a person hasn't gone more than 63 days without health insurance. If that's the case, under Romney's plan, they could be denied coverage. Romney's own campaign had to backpedal on that and several other claims made during the debate. Governor Romney has said he would repeal the Affordable Care Act if elected. The vice presidential debate is this week. Meanwhile, recent independent nonpartisan analysis of the Romney-Ryan health plan shows 36 million Americans would lose health care coverage under their plan. The numbers of people across the country infected with a rare form of meningitis has topped the 100 mark, with 8 deaths being blamed so far on a steroid injection used for back pain. The Massachusetts pharmaceutical company responsible for the tainted medicines has pulled all their products off the market until the investigation into the outbreak is complete. The Centers for Disease Control has information on their website for folks who are concerned they may have been exposed. The Nobel Prize for Medicine has been awarded to two scientists who've unlocked the secret to turning any cell into a stem cell. First discovered by Dr. John Gurdon of England in 1962 and validated 40 years later by work done by Dr. Shimya Yamanaka of Japan, showed that any human cell could be reprogrammed to become a stem cell to then grow into another kind of cell. It unlocks limitless potential for research and personalized treatments in medicine. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news.
We're speaking today with Dr. Joseph Smith, Chief Medical and Science Officer at West Health, which includes the West Health Institute and the West Health Policy Center, nonprofit entities founded by philanthropist Gary and Mary West, dedicated to advancing technology in healthcare that will lead to lower cost and better health outcomes. Dr. Smith is the former vice president in emerging technologies for Johnson & Johnson and also served as chief medical officer for Boston Scientific. He was named by Health Leaders magazine as one of the 20 people who make healthcare better. Dr. Smith, Smith. Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
You know, we always seem to be at some critical juncture in healthcare in America, and certainly over the recent years, the cost for healthcare has skyrocketed. It accounts for about 18% of our gross domestic product, and people say it's been growing at an unstable rate. And yet, we have the passage of the Affordable Care Act, created a lot of new opportunities, not only for including more Americans in the healthcare system, but also for generating discussions about the need to contain cost. You've recently quoted Rahm Emanuel saying, never let a good crisis go to waste. But many great minds have been trying to sort out this crisis of skyrocketing cost in healthcare. Share with us and our listeners your goal at West Health of lowering healthcare costs, but also improving patient outcomes.
Well, you know, it's funny. You talk about how we always seem to be at a critical juncture in healthcare. I'm not sure that we've always faced the challenges that we currently face. I was reading a report a little while ago that says that if things continue as they are by 2030, the median family income will equal the median family expense on healthcare, including insurance and out-of-pocket expenses. And I don't think we're actually going to head there. I think we know that we need to be in a different spot. And I think all of the national focus on healthcare reform, I think, is timely. It's essential. It's probably overdue. I would point out that much of the Accountable Care Act is reform about how healthcare is paid for, and not so much about how healthcare is delivered. And that's really where we think there needs to be a much sharper focus. And I think there is an opportunity to decentralize, perhaps democratize, and in the process, maybe even demystify some of healthcare delivery. We see four different areas for impact that draw a lot of attention for us. The first is in efforts to create more of an efficient medical marketplace. You would not think of going into a restaurant and having the maitre d' decide what you should have for dinner and then send you the bill 3 months later. I mean, yet that's the way healthcare gets apportioned, delivered, and paid for. And so we need to take advantage of all of the natural skills we have in assessing value in the things we need and we purchase and apply those to healthcare.
So, Dr. Smith, you are trained as and practiced as a cardiologist, but you also have an extensive medical engineering background. And you've said that we're at this fertile intersection between engineering and medicine. Tell us more about that. What are the collaborations at this intersection that you're tracking out at West Health?
I love this space. I've spent my whole career at this, what I think is a wonderful intersection between engineers who are inherently problem solvers and healthcare, which is really not short at all of problems. And so I think there's a tremendous opportunity to make a difference. You know, it's with some humor that I read in a recent Congressional Budget Office report that medical technology is widely viewed as being in some way responsible for escalation in costs. Technology itself, when appropriately applied, has dramatic opportunity to lower healthcare costs. We're working under the rubric at the moment that chronic diseases ought to be managed episodically at encounters in doctor's offices or emergency rooms or hospitals, as opposed to when a patient needs to be seen. And I think we can completely change that paradigm of chronic disease management. I mean, you know, when you have complex equipment, you don't wait for it to start making a funny noise in order to service it. We have dashboards on our cars that tell us how things are going so that we can make those interval changes to keep it functioning well. We have all of that for technology that we care about, and yet we don't do that for chronic disease management where we really could. And so the notion of using little bits of technology to look in on patients who aren't in front of a doctor, who are in their normal activities of daily living or who are sleeping, and look in using relatively simple bits of technology to get a dashboard on how is that person doing. So that patient with heart failure, if they've gained a couple pounds, and if when they walk up a flight of steps, it's a little bit slower for them. All of that's information that's readily accessible. And if we just bothered to look at it and use, you know, smart systems that we have in place for other complex machinery, we'd be able to identify those people who are beginning to fail, as opposed to waiting for them to get so sick.
Well, let's pull the thread a little on that and talk about mobile technology. And with billions of people possessing cell phones in the world, you say we're just not utilizing this platform for delivering better healthcare in a meaningful way yet. We can gather and deliver health data. You say that we need to move our healthcare system from moving the patients to moving the data to serve the patients when and where they are needed. So how do we achieve the ends when we have a relatively siloed healthcare system at present?
So siloed is perhaps an understatement, and I do think that speaks immediately to the need here. I think we have an inherent problem, which I think we have lots of systems that each manage data different ways and store and transmit and query and answer differently. And so this notion that if you're a Mac user, as I am, the notion that every time you get another piece of Mac hardware, the other hardware works with it just fine. It knows exactly where it is and what it can do. And it was all easy. It was all functionally interoperable immediately. And we have none of that benefit in healthcare. We have every different vendor making information flow using their own proprietary formats and processes, in part because we have this desire to make sure that healthcare information is both secure and timely. But I think one of the downsides is that we've created every different company that makes one of these gadgets has its own way of moving information around, and that frustrates the notion of the value proposition of the plurality of these solutions, so that we no longer depend on each device alone to manage all of the concerns around a patient, but we can use a smarter net of devices that can all talk to each other to get a better, more holistic view of how an individual patient is doing or populations of patients are doing. We have it in terms of an internet backbone. You know, you don't need to buy a specific computer or a specific cell phone to get on the internet. We have an internet protocol that allows every device you can imagine gets on and accesses the internet and shares information. We do not have that for wireless medical devices or electronic medical records. It's all been siloed up and diced up and with lots of little proprietary walled gardens that are really getting in our way at this point.
One of the things, Dr. Smith, in clinical facilities specifically seems to be this whole issue, as you pointed out there, about the wireless revolution that has come. And clinical facilities are challenged to provide a system that's both secure and it's high functioning. And you've noted that there's these three elements impacting broadband use in the clinical setting. You've got the patient monitoring system, obviously critical. Two, you have the technology that handles the business and the data side. And three, you've got that Wi-Fi user walking in the door every day. And So how do you envision these three tiers being effectively managed, either in the healthcare facilities of today or the clinical facilities that we're trying to build for the future?
Well, I think the good news is people are readily admitting that there's an issue and a concern here. You would like not at all to have the young grandson of a patient downloading a video in the waiting room and have him use up the critical bandwidth that's necessary for monitoring his granddad
exactly.
in an intensive care unit, right? So,
right.
You know, on one hand, you'd say, well, I'm sure that doesn't happen. But if, in fact, we're all using a shared resource without some notion of prioritization, that can, of course, occur. You can have the least vital but perhaps most consumptive processes taking over all of the space. And so one of the fellows working with us here used to be president of Inner Wireless, a private company before, but now is working with us in a nonprofit setting. He's architected what we call medical-grade wireless utility, and it's a solution for that issue that manages the appropriate resource distribution in hospitals. And it's something that we've architected and make freely available for hospitals. And Ed's now worked with, he tells me, I think almost 100 hospitals in trying to get them up to speed. And so there is this notion that wireless communication can be as dependable and reliable as power and oxygen and lighting in a hospital.
We're speaking today with Dr. Joseph Smith, Chief Medical and Science Officer at West Health, which includes the West Health Institute in San Diego and the West Health Policy Center in D.C., nonprofit entities dedicated to advancing technology in healthcare that will lead to lower costs and better health outcomes. Dr. Smith is a fellow at the American College of Cardiology, as well as the American Institute for Medical and Biological Engineering. Dr. Smith, you mentioned just a few minutes ago liberating health data. I was thinking about our good friend Todd Park, who's now the Chief Technology Officer. And tell us a little more about what the bigger picture is of how you're going to liberate data and how that's going to help us build this efficient, effective, and elegant healthcare system with just-in-time delivery of health information when you need it.
Well, it's a tall order, and I think almost anyone's enthusiasm would pale next to Todd Park.
He's, we agree.
I've watched him talk, and he gets up in a lather, and I think it's because there is this remarkable opportunity. When you look at what the good Mr. Park has opened to him in terms of data that Medicare and Medicaid has collected over processes and procedures they've paid for and then outcomes they can track, I think there's an opportunity to ask all sorts of questions, particularly when you introduce new technologies and you can determine how they're used, but then whether or not the outcome that you imagine imagine in a narrow randomized controlled trial is in fact represented in a larger cohort in a real world scenario. And so I think we have one of our fellows working closely with Todd to see if there's an opportunity to enhance the clarity and the transparency associated with large data sets and see where there may be the greatest possible opportunity to make a difference.
Dr. Smith, your colleague at West Health that we referenced a little while ago, Dr. Eric Topol, spoke about the need for training the next generation of healthcare providers. That's a subject near and dear to our hearts in primary care, and to train them to understand these emerging areas of genomics and telemedicine and other innovations in care that are contributing to the transformation of healthcare. Tell us about how you at West Health are approaching innovation in health professional training in your fellowships, and how might these fellowships and the training that you're doing disrupt the traditional model of health professions education?
We've talked about how fertile this intersection is between technology and medicine, and it does require, you know, energized individuals. We're lucky to have a couple of these present with us at Scripps Wireless Health Scholars. This is the notion of taking folks who are, you know, already trained physicians, many board certified, exposing them to the engineers and the kind of the technology that may be amenable to use in clinical scenarios where people really haven't explored the full opportunity. And the number of ideas that quickly fly are almost hard for us to keep track of. And then we also have a fellowship with UCSD here as well. As energized as they are, they're still too few. So we're trying to set an example of how to do this. And one of them, you know, came up with a really cool idea, and we've been able to provide enough resources that here in the near term, that's likely going to be its own little startup company, because the idea looks like it could really make a big difference. And so we love this opportunity. It is, again, this fascinating collision between energetic people and a tremendous need, an unmet need to make healthcare much more affordable. And so San Diego is a terrific environment for that, mm-hmm. because unlike the East Coast, where I did all my training, where the model is one more of excellence through local competition, here there's more of a model of excellence through collaboration. And so, of course, it takes smart people in the middle. And so we're delighted to have these fellows take advantage of the opportunity.
Well, you not only have smart people, but you have a sweet organizational design at West Health. And you have two not-for-profit branches, and you also have two for-profit branches, the West Health Investment Fund and the West Health Incubator. We're always, it seems, at the garage phase of innovation around healthcare. And it looks like you've got a nice collaboration that goes on to support the activities that go on. Tell us about some of the promising investments that you've made, as well as other innovations that are underway at West Health.
The structure that we've adopted with the four organizations is not accidental. If you come up with a good idea, or if you see other people with them, how do you then go the next step? And so part of that is small business incubation. You know, when if you think about an innovative and entrepreneurial community, it's really everywhere. And so how do you accelerate the work of others? And that got us to starting an investment fund. And then ultimately, it doesn't really matter if you come up with a great solution if the public policy environment or the incentives for payment aren't aligned so that they can be appropriately used. And so that got us to be quite active in Washington, D.C. at a policy center. To spend a moment on the investments, all of the investment proceeds go back to the charitable mission. And so this is, you know, and all four of these organizations share the same vision and mission, which is how to lower healthcare costs in the United States. Along the big data theme, we have a small investment in Humedica. It's a Boston-based company that's looking really hard to make sure that when you look at big data collected from multiple hospital systems, you're not going to get kind of waylaid by casual descriptions of patients, and they do natural language processing of doctor's notes to better understand that when someone gets coded as having diabetes, do they really have diabetes? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if they're exposed to a particular therapy, are they really taking it? So we like them for the big data play. In terms of healthcare transparency, particularly transparency around pricing, we like a small company that we invested in called Change Healthcare, and they're working with large employers to make sure that when their employed population needs to make a healthcare decision, that they understand the price and as best they can the value. And then when we think about this notion of taking care of people with chronic diseases when they're not in the hospital, we've invested in a small Minnesota company called HealthSense, and they work very hard to look at these kind of continuing care models of retirement communities where you'll have a spectrum of different forms of living scenarios on one campus to instrument the apartments in the people's homes so that it's easy to look in on them, either from the vantage point of the organization or even from their family to make sure that, you know, mom's up out of bed, she's taking her medicine, and everything's pretty much okay or not. And that gives you a way to prioritize who you need to check in on in a given day. And so this notion of, you know, less intrusive but appropriate at-distance monitoring to make sure that people are doing okay with their chronic diseases, we like that as an opportunity going forward.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Joseph Smith, the Chief Medical and Science Officer at West Health, whose unique mission is to advance innovative and cost-effective technology innovations and solutions that will lower the cost of healthcare in America. You can find out more about the work they do by going to westhealth.org and follow them at West Health. Dr. Smith, thank you so much for joining us on Conversations today.
And thank you today. It's been a real pleasure.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, this week we'll look at a false claim from Mitt Romney at the first presidential debate. Romney claimed that a new board set up by the Affordable Care Act will, quote, tell people ultimately what kind of treatments they can have. But that's not true. This board will recommend ways to reduce the growth in Medicare spending. It has nothing to do with health care for all Americans, and it is forbidden from rationing care or reducing Medicare benefits as stipulated in the law. The board, it's called the Independent Payment Advisory Board, is a 15-member panel made up of healthcare experts, doctors, economists, and consumer representatives. Republicans have long claimed that this board was made up of bureaucrats that would ration care, but the board has no power to do so. In fact, the law puts a lot of limits on what exactly the board can do. The nonpartisan Kaiser Family Foundation said that this board would have to find savings from Medicare Advantage and the prescription drug program, skilled nursing facilities and home health, dialysis, ambulatory services, and durable medical equipment. The board's recommendations can be overridden by Congress, but it needs a 3/5 majority in each House to do so. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Sitting down, it seems, can be as potentially deadly as smoking if done for long periods of time and over a long period of time, and that's not good news because we are a nation of sedentary sitters. And it turns out, sitting is a big contributor to our obesity epidemic, to the rise in diabetes and heart disease, and a host of other illnesses. So when Steve Bordley was injured in an accident a few years ago, the active former elite athlete ended up sitting in a wheelchair for almost 2 years, and during that time, he gained a lot of weight. And when he had to learn to walk again, this former distance runner began to see the health benefits of just walking, not intensely, but consistently throughout the day. Now, the Surgeon General recommends 10,000 steps a day to maintain good health.
10,000 steps a day is kind of the benchmark that the Surgeon General has set for the minimal amount of steps that an American should take. And the University of Tennessee about 2 years ago did a study and found that the average American walks less than half of that amount. So we're actually deteriorating if we're walking less than that.
And when he was able to go back to work, he worried he was going to slide back into the pitfalls of sitting. His solution? He created the Trek Desk. Bordley designed a modular standing desk that fits over any exercise machine. The idea being, if you just walk slowly but consistently, the effects would be tremendous.
I was literally walking 10 hours a day, very slowly, and within a period of about 6 weeks, I lost more than 25 pounds. My back problems went away, and I was sleeping like I did when I was in my 20s. I felt tremendous.
And some research to date bears him out. Walking slowly throughout the day does seem to do remarkable things for your health. Reduce your chances of getting type 2 diabetes, reduce the risk of certain cancers, and maybe even reduce the incidence of first heart attacks. And it runs about $500, maybe 10% of the cost of some high-end models for exercising out there. And it can be assembled in under an hour.
People should at least move. throughout the day. Whatever they can do to move is critical to their health. And that's really the message that we're trying to get out. 10,000 steps at a minimum. Everybody should know the amount of steps they're taking during the day.
The Trek Desk, a simple reconfiguration of the typical workspace, but one that allows for purposeful movement throughout the day, improving health and well-being and cognitive skills. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at wesufm.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.